Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Film Philosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Film Philosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the Spice Masters over here, Chad Riley and Spencer Williams.
Spice Masters.
Spicy.
What?
Exactly. He got it. Get on the boat, Spence.
I'm not on this boat. I'm off the spice boat.
Spicy.
We got a great show in store for you as we're going to be talking about some really big stuff. Let's see if you can get the hints in our little bit of credit. So, Chad, why don't you give it to him?
So many hints. You're home for the latest Avengers Infinity War spoilers. The Film Philosophers podcast is proudly presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. If Avengers Infinity War spoilers aren't enough for you and you just want to be spoiled on a variety of films, you should definitely subscribe to the Film Philosophers podcast. We're available on all your favorite platforms, including Player FM, Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Libsyn, Google Play, and now Spotify. Every Wednesday morning brings a new episode your way once you're signed up.
You can also check out Infinity War spoilers on social media, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmphilosophers, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmphilosophy101. Finally, you don't need to wait until the Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War spoilers on, oops, I said that wrong, completely.
You got this.
I got it. Avengers Infinity War spoilers. Stop. I can't say it. Stop flowing to access our entire library of great content. Just visit our website anytime at philosophers.com.
Wow.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know how you landed that plane, but you landed it.
It's in the
oh
ground.
Lord above.
It's on fire.
That was
it's
a fire. Train wreck
it's
and
in
a
the
half.
Ground.
The train was moving and Spence came on and everything derailed.
I don't know what
There's
happened.
There's a mass just
he reduced
event.
It all to dust.
Seriously.
Like a certain someone?
Oh, perhaps.
Or
spoilers.
Someone. Well, needless to say, unless you haven't been paying attention to anything that's been said, we are going to be talking about Avengers Infinity War spoilers. So, like we said, throughout the entire credits, really.
This is the part where Eddie can't land the plane.
We are talking about spoilers, so spoiler warning, spoiler warning, spoiler warning.
Listen to that alarm, people. Get off the boat.
Get off the boat.
If you have been living under a rock and you haven't had a chance to see the latest Avengers film, Avengers Infinity War, it did drop this past weekend, and we have just endured 3 days of excitement and man tears with this opening weekend. It's
okay, one of us had man tears.
Oh, don't lie. You had them too.
No.
You had them too.
No, your cheeks glistened.
I don't care.
With man tears.
And?
3 times in a row.
And? Just sounds like I'm more passionate than you are. It's okay, whatever.
Well, you're more something than I am. That's true. I'll give that one to you.
Chad, why don't you give us, again, that official synopsis goodness?
Oh, well, we've said this before, so I'll do something different. Everybody dies.
What?
That was it. It's not the truth. Not everybody dies, but a whole heck of a lot of them do.
As we said before several times, this film was directed by the Russo brothers and stars a whole bunch of people that we're not going to really get into because we've said it twice already. Once on last week's episode in Lesson 110, and on a special episode this past weekend called Special Feature, where we gave our unspoiled review. So if you're listening right now and you do not want to be spoiled, first off, you should have got the hint a little bit ago. Secondly, we have a spoiler-free review in our special features. So if you go and check out our list of episodes, it should be listed as special feature, our Infinity War review, no spoilers.
Basically, we've given you every possible option to not be spoiled. So from here on in, it's on you.
Yeah, this is your fault.
Exactly.
If you don't know.
So, like I said, we've had a chance to see this film several times now. And it's a great film. We've talked about it at length over this past weekend. Within our own circles, we've talked about it a lot. We've mentioned about how, you know, just the film does so much. But there's another thing this film does, and it leaves you with questions.
As any good film should, if it's not 100%. The end of the story.
No, exactly, 100%. And that's exactly what you want with a film like this, because of the fact that it has been expected and anticipated and hyped for so long that you want to make sure that when you're done with the film, there are expectations for the future. You want to make sure there's more stuff coming, I mean, down the pipeline.
Absolutely.
Obviously. So
it can't end with this.
It better not end with this. This is the bummer ending. If it ends here.
This is like the worst. If they're like, all right, guys, we're closing up shop here at Marvel. We hope you enjoyed our run. Now we're just going to be putting out cartoons. I'd be like, nope. I want my money back. But like I said, this type of film, of course, like Chad said, it's a great film and it does leave you with a ton of questions. And so we're going to be asking some of those questions. We're going to be speculating. We're going to be doing what we did before, actually, we went to see the film, which was we gave our opinions, we gave our thoughts, we gave our theories. And now we're going to be giving you our questions, our thoughts on those questions, our opinions, and what's to come,
and
our
some
predictions.
New theories.
Yeah, exactly. Spence, I know we've talked about this before on the last episode on special features, but I need to know, what was one of the biggest moments in this film that really moved you? And like I said, we've talked about it already. We are giving spoilers, spoilers, and more spoilers.
That was very abrupt. Okay, so this is less of a specific thing and more of a general idea for the whole movie after like thinking about it.
I already like it.
But, like, this movie was really aggressive. Like, I did not expect, like, Thanos to get the completed gauntlet in one movie. I thought they were going to, like, take, like, you know, most of this movie and then a little bit of the next one to, like, really get going with that. So it's like, wow, where are we going now?
Like, seriously, the cojones on the Russo brothers for, like, totally omitting every single stone that was on that gauntlet by the time Thanos is thrown down with Captain America, and there's nothing on the gauntlet practically except for like one stone in the trailer. Mm-hmm. And you go and watch the film, I'm like, this dude has all of them but one. Seriously?
So seriously,
it's like, yeah, I totally get what you're saying, because that was one of the things that came up to my mind. I'm like, yeah, the trailers completely tricked us. 100%.
Yeah, after Thor Ragnarok's trailer, like, you cannot trust the trailers from Marvel.
Well, and even then, here's the funny thing. In the trailers, they were doing that whole thing with his eye, and they're like, oh, well, he had both of his eyes in one of the teasers that they had. And then you watch Thor Ragnarok, and they're like, oh, he lost his eye, and he had both of his eyes in the movie. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they sent out another one, and he's minus one eye in some of the trailers. And then we go and see the film, and you come to find out that Rocket Raccoon ends up giving him an eye. And at that point, I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe they weren't lying. Maybe those scenes that we were seeing, maybe it was like in conjunction with, you know, after he got that eye. No.
Didn't he have his old hair with that one?
I don't know.
They're totally going to do whatever they want to do.
And next one, they're going to have the Thanos fighting Howard the Duck, for all I know.
Oh, my God.
Chad, what about
never,
you?
Never. Let's see. Well, really bridging off of Thor Ragnarok, which we've established before, I was a huge fan of that movie. You guys also enjoyed it. I thought that Thor's arc in this film was one of the absolute strongest arcs in the film. I mean, given where he's already just gone from Ragnarok, which was just November, so it hasn't even been an entire year since that dropped.
Yeah.
But then you start the movie off on the Asgardian ship with half of them already presumably killed off. The other half, who knows where they are. And Thor is like barely able to move his hand at Thanos' feet. He's already been, you know, defeated, essentially. Heimdall can't really move. Loki's just fine. He's walking around, you know, like he's a spring chicken. But he's Loki,
really.
You know, not for long. The... So the arc that Thor goes through with Rocket's help largely, I thought was extremely compelling. And when you get to the climactic battle sequence and he goes all like, well, Thunder God, like he goes like full OP, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was incredible. And I would watch that sequence again like every morning when I wake up just to like get enthused for the day. Like, yeah, I'm going to lightning strike everything.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
So if we ever hear you get up in the morning and you're like, trying to do your deep voice, we know what he's doing. I would have to say one of the biggest standout moments for me was I think the... I don't know what that was. My stomach just made a noise through my mouth.
Okay, first of all, I don't know who smuggled a kitten in here, but it's not appropriate. Secondly, I had just taken a giant mouthful of water or Sprite. It was already bubbling in my mouth, and then whatever that gurgle was...
We are a train wreck today. Well, and you started. Chad.
Can we time stone that mess and go backwards and try it again?
No, let's go back to before we started so I can get that line right.
It's all good.
You know what, Spence?
Don't worry, guys.
No,
I'll bring it home.
No! Why? No!
Stop it. Stop the insanity. Okay.
Back to the track that we were on before Spence threw us off.
It was your kitten mouth, whatever the heck is
no
happening.
No cats on the podcast.
Hold on. Here we go. All right, we rewind it. There we go. One of the standout moments for me had to be, I know he's fairly new to the universe, but I love the fact that Spider-Man was really coming into himself. Like, ever since Homecoming was a great... introduction for
superb
the character.
Superb Spider-Man film.
And then you have this film, which really just kind of shows the young Peter Parker as well, but the maturity that he's had since he started becoming more of a serious superhero, more of a common character that you see. And the arc that occurs within this type of film really, like, it bats to the fences, and it really does send it home. All the way up until the end when he's dying and he dies and he's gone.
Dusted.
But I really enjoyed how refreshing it was to have him, which Tom Holland does a superb job as Spider-Man, and to have him as a part of this team dynamic. I mean, it's been so long since we've had a decent Spider-Man. And the dreams and aspirations of seeing a Spider-Man with the Avengers has always been on everybody's mind. So being able to see him finally interacting with Tony Stark and Star-Lord and Drax and seeing him battle against Thanos, it was great. It was super awesome to see until they killed him.
Well, and honestly, there is no replacement. If you're talking like longtime fandom, right, and you're talking about people who have read the comics for 1 year or 40 years, you know, whatever, there is no replacement for Spider-Man.
Oh, no.
There's no character that you can sub in for Spider-Man and have it mean the same thing and feel the same way. So the fact that they did whatever they did with Sony to share the character... I mean, high marks to both sides of that agreement, because it's benefiting everybody. And you wouldn't have, even if you went with a character, let's say a teenager, teenage Groot, and you did something similar with Groot to what they did with Spider-Man in this film, it wouldn't feel the same. There's something special about Spider-Man. There always has been. So the fact that they found a way to get him into this, well, mega franchise, into this cinematic universe is brilliant, because the emotional impact of his final scene in this film is potent. It's palpable.
Oh yeah. I'm going to be honest and say that's when the man tears flowed for me the most. It's such a gut wrenching scene to watch it transpire, recognizing the fact that, number one, Spider-Man is only 16 in this film. So he's a young kid in this role. Not that Tom Holland's 16, but the character itself.
Sure.
So you're recognizing that this teenage superhero, you know, is about to bite the dust. But even more so than that, establishing the fact that he has his spider sense, and knowing how much more of an assault on the senses, if you will, this was for him in that instance. It's like, man, how much of that dread and loom was he feeling in terms of, you know, passing or being dusted is what everybody's continuing to call it in all the reviews. How much more does that impact play on it? And how well, like, Tom Holland did in that scene. I mean, man, it's tough.
The kid has chops.
Oh,
100%. He can sell it.
Yeah, I was super upset when he just opens his mouth like, Mr. Stark, I don't feel good. And I'm like, I want out of this movie theater right now. So badly. I can't watch this. And then he died. Ugh, it was terrible.
It was rough. But with a lot of those great moments that we've had in the movie, I mean, obviously there are more. If we had more time, we could probably go into depth of other areas that really stood out to us. And I kind of wanted to know some of your guys' key areas.
I mean, we've got some things that are going to guide us along the path a little bit.
True, which is where I'm leading to. You know, I kind of want to jump into some of the questions that were left with the film. Obviously, the film is a first part of what's to be two films. And this film definitely leaves you at the edge of your seat all the way until the very, very, very end of the film. But like Chad mentioned earlier, any great film that's a part of a larger franchise will leave you with questions so that you can create the dialogue like what we're doing here.
And so, I think it's interesting because we've talked about this on some of the other work that we've done, specifically the special episode over the weekend, but so many people go into a movie like this and they think, oh, well, I need to find out who lives, who dies, what happens, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not even the end of the story. That's nowhere close to the end of the story, which is what's so fulfilling as a longtime fan of comic books and that form of serialized storytelling that kind of doesn't ever have an end. It has to it has to reinvent itself all the time. Characters change and develop, and then they revert back, and sometimes they die and they come back to life, and all sorts of things happen because it's, in a way, it's a never-ending story unless it loses popularity.
Yeah.
And very similarly here, you had a lot of people going into the theater thinking, I just want to know what happens. And then you see what happens and you realize, wait a minute, this is a much bigger story than I thought. Because that's only the beginning of now a much more emotionally resonant, deep story that I want to know how it goes beyond what is the end, quote unquote, here. I can't let it sit like this. I can't sit in the theater and just watch Spider-Man die and that's the end of it. By the way, he's not the only one. For those of you who don't care about spoilers but you still haven't seen it, his is the most emotionally resonant departure, but there are a bunch of them that go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that as we get a little bit deeper into the show, but like we said, there's still a lot of unanswered questions that we have. And honestly, some of them begin right at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as the lights go down and the film comes up, you're already asking certain questions. One of those questions is, where were Korg, Meek, and Valkyrie, as well as the other half of the Asgardians, at the beginning of the film? You see a beaten up Thor. You see, like we were mentioning earlier, you see Heimdall who can't even get up, and tons of bodies that are just laying around, and Valkyrie and Korg are nowhere to be seen.
The ship is in pieces already.
Yeah, the ship is, I believe it's halved, or it's, you're right, it's in pieces. And so you're wondering, where's Taika Waititi? I wanted Taika Waititi in that moment.
It was not the moment for Korg.
True.
I understand Korg not being in that scene because Korg is comic relief. Like 97% comic relief with a heart of gold, but still comic relief. So that was not at all a scene that would have, doing any sort of comedy in that sequence would not have worked. So I understand him not being there. Meek doesn't even really use words, so that's fine. Valkyrie is the big absence. Like, where is Valkyrie?
True, because obviously ever since the last film, which was in Thor Ragnarok, she kind of had this renewed Vigor to serve her king and be an actual Asgardian again. And so I think that that's one of those questions where I think either it's going to be answered in the Captain Marvel film, or because this is one of those types of moments where it makes a lot of sense for her to have been there, like plain and simple, mm-hmm. like fight till the death kind of thing.
Right.
And she wasn't.
Yeah, there has to be a really interesting reason why she's not there.
Spence, why wasn't she there?
I don't know.
You're supposed to know this.
She could have used like Heimdall's Bifrost to get off the ship like Hulk did.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's true. They could have sent her and like, somewhere other than Earth to warn people.
Like, what if they sent her to wherever Captain Marvel is?
Could be. The other thing that this led me to also was the related question of where in the worlds or where in the realms is Lady Sif? Jamie Alexander's character from the first two Thor movies, who was originally like the female, like premier female Asgardian warrior. She wasn't in Ragnarok, which I think they said was mainly due to her schedule conflict because she, the actress, is the main character in Blindspot.
Blindspot.
But she's also not in this film, nor do they ever talk about her.
No.
There's no indication of where she's been for several years by this point. So even though she did do that odd little guest starring stint on one of the seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Or two, I think she was in two episodes. Anyway, so where is she?
Yeah.
Is she going to matter? Did she and Valkyrie, or is Valkyrie going to get her? Does she have other people that she's rallying somehow? I mean, there's a lot, quite frankly, in Thor's quadrant, corner of the Marvel universe that has never been explored. That you could easily, I mean, you could easily make another half a dozen Thor movies just looking at the different realms and what happens there. But you could easily bring other characters. I mean, we saw the head of Beta Ray Bill as a giant statue
in Thor
on Sakaar. He's a very powerful character. They could decide to introduce at some point. Obviously, Sif. We've never seen Baldur, who's another warrior in the comics. There's quite a bit that just is off the radar, so to speak. Who knows if it's going to come into play? Probably not in Avengers 4, but they will have to answer for some of it eventually. Hopefully, Valkyrie will be in Avengers 4 because she was a breakout character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the other questions in this particular question itself is logistically. Will they bring Jamie Alexander back to reprise the role? It's been so long, her being missing within the MCU, that a lot of people have kind of already pushed her out of their minds in terms of her actually being a part of that ensemble in these films. So that's even if the Marvel Cinematic individuals and Kevin Feige and the rest of the teams decide to actually bring her back into this universe, or quite possibly just find a way to write her out. Mm. From a technical aspect. So that's always a possibility. But another one of the questions that we had was, as you continue to watch the film, you come to find out that Thor already has the Power Stone, which is, what did I say? Oh, Thor. Thor is powerless.
And Thor does not know that Loki has the Space Stone.
True. But Thanos already has the Power Stone, which is the Purple Stone, which if you're playing at home, the Power Stone was the stone that was saved by the Guardians of the Galaxy and was safeguarded on Xandar by Glenn Close.
By Glenn Close personally.
She is on that planet.
Nova Prime.
So, the big question then is, what exactly did Thanos do to Xandar? Did he destroy the entire planet? Did he eliminate half of the population? It's one of those things where it's just implied that, before Thanos destroyed half of Xandar, you just, and got the Power Stone, blah, blah, blah.
I do believe he uses the word decimated.
Did
which
he?
Basically means a large portion of a population is removed. So presumably he did his half and half thing that is kind of Thanos's shtick.
Yeah, I'm hoping that when the Blu-ray comes out, there's a little bit more of an expansion on that explanation, because just saying that you decimated Xandar doesn't really cut it for me, to be honest. Because,
well, quite frankly, there's a whole other set of stories you could bridge off of that. I mean, Kevin Feige has been very upfront in the months leading up to Infinity War about how they are not revealing any of their plans for the next phase or phases of the MCU until Avengers 4 is all wrapped up. One character that we easily could have seen by now, because, I mean, the Force has been shown, is Nova. Nova is a fairly long-standing character in the comics. They've had several of them, actually, several Novas. And the way that the Nova Corps is represented in Guardians Volume 1 is not all that similar to the way that Nova works in the comics. So something like the decimation of the Xandarian society and them having to redo how they peacekeep throughout the galaxy could lead you into some sort of an origin story for that character. Yeah. Obviously different than what you see in the comics, but, you know, it could be paving the way. So you could have some sort of a retrospective, you know, after the destruction at the hands of Thanos and his children, here's what we did. And now, hopefully, Richard Rider, now you are Nova for the following reasons, whatever happens there.
That'd be actually really cool.
And you've actually been a fan of the Nova storyline for a good amount of time.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
What is it? I know this is kind of a digression from what we're talking about, but what is it that makes Nova so unique?
I think that, number one, I got into comics, really into comics, in the 90s, and there was a proliferation of teenage-type characters.
Okay.
One version was a team called the New Warriors. Nova was one of the founding members of the New Warriors, and so that's where I, like, that's where the character first kind of popped onto my radar. And then he had some, he had already existed as a solo character. I just didn't know about him until then. But he's basically like a human rocket. He zips around. He can fly at, you know, faster than light speed, and zips around and saves planets. That's the goal. And inside his armor, not unlike Tony Stark, but not like Tony Stark, inside his armor is the entire what's called the world mind, which is all of the conglomerated intelligence, like military police intelligence, of the Xandarian culture. So that anything that they know about any other culture in the galaxy, about the ways to defuse certain threats, mm-hmm. about different kinds of like moves. It's sort of like the Matrix. I mean, it's like if you imagine Neo, right, suddenly knowing Kung Fu, right,
mm-hmm.
in the first Matrix movie. It's kind of like that, where inside the armor, when he's armored up as Nova, he has access to an entire treasury of knowledge and skills that will help him single-handedly save entire worlds sometimes. So, and there are more than one, you know, Nova Force entities mm-hmm. throughout the galaxy kind of being this peacekeeping force and sometimes going bad and fighting each other, you know, whatever. But anyway, there was sort of a variation of that shown in Guardians 1. I mean, the Nova Force is a police force.
Yeah.
They appeared to only be on Xandar, and they appeared to require their kind of hive-connected spaceships in order to stop Ronan, right? In the comics, they would be in suits doing that. They wouldn't be in spaceships. So depending on what they choose to do, if Nova's even a character on the MCU's developing radar, they could choose to use this event as an impetus for kind of transitioning how the Nova Corps does what it does.
Hmm.
And paving the way for a guy flying around space in a suit.
Well, I mean, it didn't have Thor flying around space doing stuff, so.
Which he does.
Worked out really well.
That it did. and speaking of jumping around and trying to figure out, I wanted to jump to this question in terms of one of the things that was kind of consistent throughout the entire film was this battle between Bruce Banner and his inner Hulk, or whatever, if you want to call it. And it was almost like, because you get a glimpse of the Hulk at the beginning of the film, and he's fighting Thanos, and he ends up getting his butt whooped. Plain and simple.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. And then after that, like, Bruce can't turn back into the Hulk. And the Hulk, very aware of what's going on, sometimes allows him to change his head so he can say no or whatever. And so I guess the big question is, what was up with that? Like, I don't know about you guys. I think if there was any, if I were to pick any complaint, I think that was kind of interesting and almost like a little bit off in terms of the rest of the storyline.
Well, I always like read into it that the Hulk was scared because he got beat up really badly, really quickly, like you just said.
True.
Has that ever happened to the Hulk? Like, to the point where he can't even get up?
I don't know, Chad.
Not in the MCU. Not in the cinematic. I mean, he... oh, gosh, what's his name? Bronski. The
Abomination.
Abomination, thank you. I mean, he beat him pretty bad in that film, but aside from that, I mean, it wasn't a quick battle. It took a long time throwing cars and whatever and throwing down with each other. But, yeah, no, not being summarily defeated that rapidly. Also... there were press junket type interviews done before Thor Ragnarok came out with Mark Ruffalo, who plays both characters. And he had said that they had had conversations about, since they weren't at that time planning a solo Hulk film for the near future, they were going to use Ragnarok, Infinity War, and Avengers 4 as a mechanism for giving Hulk one, like, consistent storyline. So where he is in Ragnarok, then where he gets to in Infinity War, and where he goes in Avengers 4 is all one giant arc for Bruce Banner slash the Hulk. So I mean, undoubtedly we're going to see the Hulk again. He's going to emerge somehow in Avengers 4. What the prompt for that is anybody's guess. I would assume, with talk of a potential Black Widow solo film, it would not be the death of Natasha Romanoff, but, you know, you never know. Maybe the imminent death, the like almost guaranteed death, if Hulk doesn't come out and save her, would be enough to draw him back out, because both Bruce and the Hulk have some form of a connection with Black Widow in the films.
True, but because it wasn't until you were saying something that really kind of brought something to mind. There was also a connection with the Hulk and Valkyrie.
There was. They're and, like playmates.
Well, I mean, to some extent. I mean, who knows? But that may also be a part of maybe possibly why he's unable to, or however. I just think the absence of Valkyrie where he's at may possibly speak towards that. Which, now that I'm thinking about it, that'd be a real interesting like throwdown when, if Valkyrie ever meets up with those guys and Black Widow and all that, and it becomes like super awkward between Black Widow, Valkyrie, and Bruce. You're like, huh, well, I've been with him for the last 2 years. And
I think that Valkyrie was kind of having the feels for Thor by the end of Ragnarok. I think she was pretty clear about, I don't want you to get hurt or killed, specifically to Thor. But Hulk, on the other hand, because also Bruce and Valkyrie were like, I kind of feel like I know you. Yeah, me too. That's weird. But the Hulk persona has a fondness for her. But the Hulk persona also has a fondness for Black Widow. So
true.
Little love triangle in
That's
the works.
That's what I'm thinking. and kind of jumping from Hulk to back to Thor, since you mentioned Thor. One of the things that you see in the film is you actually get an explanation. I don't know if you guys, well, you guys should remember, but if you're listening at home or wherever you're at, in one of the questions that we had in lesson 110 about prepping for Infinity War was a question I had posed to Chad in terms of where the Infinity Gauntlet came from. I was wondering if maybe there was like a comic book backstory, but unfortunately, Chad didn't have an answer. Because
still don't. Did I do any research? Nope.
Nope. But it's pretty awesome to see that we finally get sort of where the gauntlet comes from, in terms of the location of its creation. You find that the gauntlet was created in a place called, Chad, go ahead and say it, because I can't pronounce it.
Nidavellir.
Whatever.
The Forge.
The Forge with Eitri, the giant dwarf.
That was great.
Which was played by Peter Dinklage, which was so great.
So good.
And it was funny because a lot of people thought that Peter Dinklage was going to voice Corvus Glaive.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so wrong. And I am so happy for that because I'm like, I don't want him to. But then you see this giant dwarf of Peter Dinklage, and it's so great. But
great reveal.
Exactly.
Especially given that, like, who knows who Eitri even is?
Exactly.
Nobody.
But.
Or very few people.
True. Like you.
I didn't.
Oh, I thought you knew that.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, this did, though.
Again, I don't do my research.
Well.
I either know it or I don't.
Like we said
or
that
I make
last
it up.
Time. Exactly. Like we said last time, just take what he says for granted. We don't know what we're talking about. Me and Spence. But it did pose a question. So recognizing that Eitri had created this gauntlet fairly recent in my mind, it didn't seem like it had been a long time creating this gauntlet. How does this line up with the mid-credit scene from Age of Ultron where, if you don't remember, Thanos actually shows up, opens up this little vault, and reaches in, grabs the gauntlet, and says, fine, I'll do it myself. How does that line up in my mind? It seems like there's a little bit of a... I mean, unless it's you know, them... Thanos had actually gotten that before Age of Ultron happened.
That'd be weird to flash forward and then back up.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm wondering.
There's a little bit about the chronology of these films that kind of does.
They're very
old. Like, the Guardians were 2 year... There's a 2 year time jump between Guardians 2 and Infinity War, around 2 years. In Thor Ragnarok, it's established that the Hulk, well, the events of Age of Ultron was 2 years ago from Ragnarok,
mm-hmm.
right? Thor says, it's been 2 years. And then Bruce is like, I've been the Hulk for 2 years?
Yeah.
And so there's a 2 year difference between presumably that mid-credit scene with Thanos and roughly the start of this film.
So within those 2 years, so apparently the star had gone cold and
nobody noticed.
And nobody noticed for 2 years. I don't know. That just seems...
I mean, it is off of all the lanes, off the charts. Rocket says it's supposedly a myth.
Yeah.
Thor seems to be the only one who even knows it exists.
True.
Because, I mean, if other Asgardians know that it exists, well, they've been decimated like 3 times by this point. So, you know, because there was, well, 2 times at least. Hela, destroyed a whole lot. And Surtur, destroyed Asgard. And then Thanos comes in, mops up, and destroys half of who's left.
Yeah.
And presumably by the end of Infinity War, another half of whoever's left from that are also
seriously,
now
there's
dusted.
Literally like a small percentage of Asgardians floating around somewhere. Because like that's like what? So let's see. If we do the math somewhat, Surtur and Hela alone take out at least a quarter to maybe 40% of the population. And then you have Thanos taking out half of that in the ship wise from that attack, and then you got half of that from the overall, you know, decimation.
Let's just put it this way. The only thing the Asgardians as a race have going for them is that they're super, super old and have access to everywhere else. So
true.
There could be colonies, you know, elsewhere. Obviously, we even saw at the beginning of the Dark World, there's kind of like the Thor world tour. You know, where they go to different realms and it shows him and the Warriors 3 and Sif kind of battling in different conflicts in different places. You see Hogan's home realm and some other things like that. So there are other places where there could be Asgardians. They just aren't on Asgard anymore because it doesn't exist.
And speaking of Asgard, this brings up another really interesting question that we had talked about it off air right before we went on. And that is, does the appearance of the Infinity Gauntlet in the first Thor film, combined with the creation of the one that Thanos has, mean that there's more than one gauntlet out there? I mean,
it would seem that there... Well, we've seen two. Hela does a thing in Ragnarok where she writes off the one that's in Odin's treasure room. she just pushes it over and says, fake, like she knows something. But presumably that there would be at least one other gauntlet somewhere, because the one that Thanos has is new.
Yeah.
So whatever would have pre-existed that one would be somewhere, even if it's not the one from Odin's treasure trove.
Yeah. Which makes you wonder then, the mold that they were looking at in Infinity War, how old that mold is, and how many Infinity Gauntlets had it been created with that mold.
True.
Because now then it makes you wonder if there's more than one person who could wield the Infinity Stones with a gauntlet like that, who's going to be the next, you know, force to be reckoned with. It just makes you wonder, like, because obviously at the end of Infinity War, the gauntlet is like a smoking heap of metal, I guess, stuck to, you know, Thanos' hand after he makes half of the universe disappear. But, I mean, maybe Thanos has a second one hiding out back somewhere in a storage room. It's like, all right, let's just, you know, just misplace the jewels, put them on this one. Okay, we're good to go. Yeah. Maybe he got a spare when he was talking to Eitri. You know what? Give me a backup. Just in case, give me a backup.
The beautiful thing that they've done here is they've
left... Don't look at me like that, Spencer.
All kinds of doors open. Almost any possibility you can think of is still open to them.
100%.
Right? So, because we also know from, well, at least from on-set reports... from when the media was allowed to go in and interview the actors in Atlanta when they were still filming the two films, Infinity War and Avengers 4. We also know that there are some character combinations that we haven't seen yet. I remember there was something with Sebastian Stan, who plays the Winter Soldier,
yeah,
who, spoiler alert, is dusted by the end of this film. But he talked about filming a scene with Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer, who we have yet to see the two of them together in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh.
And there was another person that was in that scene as well. So it's like, do all of the characters who were dusted, have they gone to a different reality and they're all together somewhere? There's a lot of speculation about that right now. So while we in this film and we think, oh, well, is there more than one gauntlet? Are there more than one versions of some of these stones? Are the characters actually dead or did they go somewhere else? There's a universe of possibilities that is open to the creators to do with as they choose.
Hmm. And speaking of outcomes, that kind of brings me to another question that we have in terms of Doctor Strange. So obviously, sure, we have that moment where Doctor Strange is looking at the future outcomes as he's, you know, doing his possessed look thing with, you know, the time stone. And he's checking out the outcomes, coming to find out that he looked at over 14,605 outcomes and only one of them worked. So the question is, you know, what did he see in the future outcome that made him give up, spoiler alert, the time stone? I mean, obviously, whatever it is had to have, the outcome had to have Tony Stark alive. Plain and simple.
Yeah, because earlier on in the movie, he specifically said to Tony Stark, if anything happens to you and the kid and I need to go after the time stone, I'm just leaving you. You're on your own.
Yeah.
So for him to have that kind of turnaround where it's like, oh yeah, I'll trade this for your life. It's like he saw something that like really required him to be there.
Tony Stark to be there. Which, by the way, Doctor Strange is one of the people that gets dusted. So
he gone.
Bye. Bye, Felicia. But it's interesting to kind of speculate with so many future outcomes that he saw, the one that was so important required Tony Stark to be a part of it, which then makes you wonder, okay, then is the outcome for defeating Thanos requiring some type of technology or maybe some type of knowledge? Obviously, Thanos says, oh, you're not the only one cursed with knowledge. You know, does it have to do with some kind of knowledge that Tony has? Is it, you know, if he marries Pepper Potts, then Thanos dies? I mean, what's the outcome here? How does that fill in with everything else? And I think that's one of the lingering questions that really kind of started poking at, you know, a lot of people's mindsets in terms of what the heck did he see that made him give up something that he was willing to have a child killed for? Plain and simple. I mean, he said, like Spence said, if I have to choose between the Time Stone, you, and the kid, I won't hesitate to, you know, leave you two and take the time stone.
Well, let me infinity down on that.
Oi.
With you. If Doctor Strange knows something, which he clearly does.
100%.
Doctor Strange traded 50% of the children in the universe for Tony Stark's life. Don't even limit it to Spider-Man. 50% of the children of any age anywhere are gone. 50% of adults, like, who knows, 50% of dogs. Cosmo, sorry, you were cool. I was waiting for you to be telepathic, but it didn't work out. 50% of walking, talking ducks. Howard.
I was going to say
that. You know, whatever. So it's 50% of sentient life, living beings in the universe, dusted, right? So Doctor Strange, whatever he saw, it presumably requires Tony Stark to survive and be around for whatever that's going to become. But he didn't just trade his life and Peter's life and Peter's life and Mantis's life, et cetera, et cetera. So he traded 50% of all lives for Tony Stark to survive.
That's actually a really... brutal. Really good point.
That is brute. That's cold. That's savage, Doc Strange. That's savage.
Which, total side note, reminded me of a meme that came up, and it said, "Do we know if Danny Rand got dusted? I'm asking for a friend." Danny, or what was the actor's name?
Oh, I don't
know. Who played Danny Rand? I don't know. Who cares? Nobody watched it.
We watched it. Don't even play.
We watched it. We got a fewer count. But talking about dusted, that kind of brings up one of the bigger questions that we have, and that is, where did all the people who were dusted go? Like, half of the universe disappears into this. They turn into ash ultimately. I mean, they fall
to ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I mean, that's essentially like you're watching that happen.
And like Chad said, half of the universe gone. So question is, where did they go? I mean, in the simplest of terms, you could say, oh, they just died. They're no longer here. They don't exist. But that's not technically how the Infinity Gauntlet works. Or at least the Soul Stone, in my mind.
I was going to say, it's the Soul Stone itself is really the kicker here. Well, not necessarily. So the Soul Stone likely is the kicker, because the Soul Stone has always behaved differently than the rest of them.
Yeah.
There's just more going on with it. But also, we've brought up before, at least offline, I think we've mentioned on the podcast before as well, there's no guarantee that the other stones haven't been somehow manipulated. You know, did Doctor Strange put some sort of an enchantment over the Time Stone before he gave it over to Thanos? And that's going to have an impact that we have yet to see. Did the Collector somehow use the Reality Stone before Thanos came to collect it from him? We don't know. We didn't see it. Did Loki do something with the Space Stone? Because he's Loki, for crying out loud. If he didn't, I'm extra disappointed in him. No matter what the status of his life may or may not be.
No!
So, you know, the Soul Stone, though, does have a special place.
Yeah.
The person that we see guarding the path to the Soul Stone even mentions that this one is different. It requires something of you. There's a wisdom to it that basically you'll never control. So, who knows what it may or may not have influenced, you know, in the proceedings.
I had a friend who theorized that quite possibly the events that happened after Doctor Strange is doing his, you know, mind, you know, focusing, when he's looking into the future and seeing the outcomes, one of them, she said that what if one of the outcomes that we're watching is actually playing out in his head, and when the second film starts, it actually goes back to that moment. So essentially, nobody actually died. It was just kind of it's like a whole Twilight thing.
Yeah, but that's like the whole, if this didn't really happen, it was a dream sequence.
Yeah,
that would be so irritating.
That would be so
so irritating.
I just wanted to throw that out there, but then what if, so one of the also, one of the other interviews that they had between Benedict Cumberbatch and Tom Holland was a conversation they were having talking about dialogue and the script and whatnot. And one of the things Tom Holland said was, I don't have a lot of things. I say, you know, stuff like, oh, that's cool, Mr. Stark, whatever. But, and he points to Benedict Cumberbatch and he's like, but he says he's got a lot more things to say. And he's over here talking a lot about the quantum realm and blah, blah, blah. That actually got a lot of people speculating. What if everybody, instead of going into the Soul Stone, or, I mean, very well, might it be in the Soul Stone, into like a quantum realm built into the Soul Stone, you know, was actually transferred into a quantum realm?
Well, the Soul Stone in the comics does have its own reality. It's called Soul World.
Soul World.
So whether that's the quantum realm or something else, it's kind of inconsequential. It does have its own environment. It's an entire pocket universe.
Mm-hmm.
That anyone who's ever touched the Soul Stone, wielded the Soul Stone, been impacted by the Soul Stone collects your soul, right?
Yeah.
And so even if you are no longer in Soul World, part of you remains in Soul World forever, presumably. Which is a good explanation for why we see young Gamora after he snaps his fingers and she asks him, did you do it? Because at least a version of Gamora is in the Soul Stone as a result of the sacrifice. So, and in the comics, that doesn't play out the same exact way, but Gamora does go into the Soul Stone and she does come back out of it.
Yeah.
So could she be influencing things somehow from inside? Totally, if they choose to go that direction.
I actually like the idea of the fact that, or not the fact, but the theory that that Doctor Strange may have put some type of enchantment on the time stone that caused, instead of everybody to be eliminated, maybe rerouted, I guess. I think there's some validity to it. I think there's some foundation for that. I don't know.
I mean, honestly, you think you saw something, that doesn't mean that you actually saw it.
We were just talking about the trailer.
What if what if the ones that are left, the original Avengers, Rocket, Okoye, and some others, what if they were the ones that were dusted? What if the other ones are actually, like, just the reality stone itself can change your perception of what went on. So what we as the audience think that we saw does not have to be what actually happened.
That'd actually be pretty cool.
I don't think they're going to pull a Sixth Sense like that on us, but they could if they wanted to.
That would be really weird. Like, Cap walks around and then he's like, puts his hand on like somebody's shoulder and goes right through their body, like, oh my God, we're not real, kind of thing.
Well, because that was like one of the things I was kind of looking forward to, was like Thanos using like the reality stone in some unexpected way to trick someone, but we didn't really see that. It was more of,
he did it for Gamora,
but whatever that.
Okay, sheesh,
I meant like, you know, friends attacking friends because they interpret reality differently type thing.
Yeah, you think you're fighting Corvus Glaive, but it's actually one of your allies.
Yeah. So that'd be a cool little twist.
It would be cool. And speaking of the people who were dusted, let's kind of talk about the people who died but weren't necessarily dusted.
I mean, sure.
You know, and you know, people like Loki, people like Gamora, people like Heimdall. Will we see any of those individuals back? Like, are they going to come back into the fray if the universe is rectified after all this? I mean, they weren't a part of that culling, if, I guess, if you want to say it. They weren't a part of that. So if the universe gets rectified after this whole thing pans out, how far back are they going to go? How far are they going to repair the universe from Thanos' madness?
I think that the only one of those three that's truly potentially safe is Gamora, because you see her again.
Yeah, in the Soul Stone.
Version of her. She still exists in some form. It's totally possible that Loki has done something to preserve himself, but he seems pretty dead.
Yeah.
He doesn't disappear. Usually if it's his illusion self, the illusion self disappears once something happens. He seemed pretty like dead weight dropped at Thor's feet.
Yeah, we haven't seen that kind of illusion.
His eyes popped out and everything. It was pretty gruesome.
So he might actually be gone unless he did something to the Space Stone before he handed it over.
I don't know.
Heimdall, I think, is gone.
Yeah.
That sucks, too. Heimdall totally did a Harrison Ford on us in this one. What kind of cockamamie stuff is that? Like, yeah, I'd like to do more stuff in the MCU, blah, 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 blah. Oh, cool. Yeah, I'd like to see him do stuff. He's dead in the first 5 minutes. You liar. You lied to us. You're not going to do anything in the MCU.
I mean, he basically single-handedly saved whatever Asgardians made it off of Asgard. I mean, he was like the Robin Hood of Ragnarok, so he had a pretty cool arc. But yeah, I think he's gone.
He had a great... I mean, it was a great role. I liked him as Heimdall. He was like this all... Why?
Gamora, I think we're going to see Gamora again. I think Zoe Saldana, like, grown Gamora. I think we'll see her again, but she'll probably be changed.
Yeah, I think a part of her will be like either like memory missing or just not all there.
Or her ability to love.
Or her ability to love, which
I think
would
they
be
could
really
definitely make a play on, because the way that Thanos obtains the Soul Stone is by sacrificing something he loves.
Yeah.
But the something that he loves, Gamora, is in direct opposition to his entire MO. So the souls, like her opposition to him, could have absolute influence over whether or not the Soul Stone, which seems to have a bit of its own agenda, like its own agency within the set, whether the Soul Stone cooperates with him or not.
Yeah.
Might be influenced by the fact that his sacrifice is diametrically opposed to what he's doing.
I don't know. Who knows? But talking about the soul world and talking about the quantum realm and all that, that kind of brings us to the next question that we have, which there was a trailer that dropped today for Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yep.
And it was really good, but it still begs the question of how will Ant-Man and the Wasp fit into this timeline? Like, is it right after the events of Civil War? Or is it a week before the events of Infinity War? You know, there's such a large amount of time that's spanning between these two, because obviously in that time frame, you've had enough time for Scarlet Witch and Vision to create this love that they have for each other, this affection that's really strong by the point you get into with Infinity War.
Yeah, right when you meet them.
Yeah, they are totally into each other. And when we left last with Civil War, they were kind of having that friendly banter, almost like playfully flirting, but still, you know, at odds because of everybody's dynamic. So at what point does this film, Ant-Man and the Wasp, fit into the timeline?
Well, I always had like an impression from the first trailer, because they're talking to Scott, I think his name is right.
Scott Lang?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. About being under house arrest, like it's just happening, when it should have been happening for a few months by this point.
That's actually a good point, because you have Black Widow mentioning, you know, they ask, you know, oh, where's Scott or Hawkeye, whatever, and they're like, him and Scott, you know, him and Ant-Man took a deal with the government for their families, whatever, and they're on house arrest.
Right.
So that's a good point, because it doesn't necessarily reference as to how long ago they did it, but it sounds like they had done it pretty far back.
Yeah, and they could end the movie with like some people being dusted and he realizing he has to go into the fray.
It's interesting to me. It's interesting to me that you could potentially have as engaging and entertaining as Ant-Man and the Wasp is bound to be. It looks very fun.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that the prospect of having a large portion of your audience caring more about the cutscene at the end than the entire movie that you're going to see itself. There will be people who go to that movie
just to
see the mid credits and or end credits scenes to see like, okay, but where do you guys fit into the mix?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if that's such a good thing. Like, I think that's what you're alluding to, that it's not a great thing to.
I just think it's interesting that you could have people who, yeah, it's fun and interesting and everything, but you know, sometimes people don't want to jump backwards. They say, okay, the story is at this point right now. Half of the universe is dead, and we've got to find a way to get them back and save things. And now
it doesn't
matter
if you can make a Pez dispenser this big.
Right. And now I'm going back in time because why?
Yeah.
You know? So it'll be interesting to see if there's more meat to the story of Ant-Man and the Wasp. That connects in some way. A lot of people are speculating, you know, the quantum realm is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Coming out of Ant-Man and the Wasp, you need to know that in order to understand whatever happens in Avengers 4, which we know that Ant-Man at least is in Avengers 4. We've seen set photos with him in costume with other characters who are, as far as we know, the living characters at the end of Infinity War.
Oh, that's right. It's true.
And allegedly, Evangeline Lilly also filmed scenes, although I don't know that she was, I don't know that she was ever photographed with other confirmed living Avengers characters.
Hmm.
So she might get dusted. Who knows? But then you've got the Sebastian Stan interview, right?
Yeah.
Who says that he has a scene, apparently, with Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer. Does that mean that they get dusted?
Or does that mean that that's a throwback to something else when he was still doing stuff for Russia?
Exactly. Exactly.
Spence, you catching on?
Yeah, I'm catching
on. Better be catching on. Shoot. We're on this Marvel hype train. What's wrong with you? Anyway. But talking about how, you know, certain properties fit in with the franchise, that also begs to ask the question, what happened to the street-level characters? What happened to, you know, the individuals from TV, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, please be gone, Punisher, Cloak and Dagger, Runaways, Inhumans, which thankfully that's over.
The list goes on. Yeah.
It does.
They're all technically part of this universe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
So they all technically should reference the culling.
Yeah.
The decimation. 100%. Unless they're, I don't know, they haven't caught up to that part of the timeline yet. Like if they're, I mean, because honestly, from, we know from Daredevil season one, there are references to the attack on New York from Avengers, the first Avengers movie. So we know that the Netflix group occurs after the attack on New York.
Yeah.
But then there's been, like, within the chronology of the MCU, there's been, what, 6 or 8 years, chronologically speaking, between that and Infinity War. And depending on how close they want to map these Netflix seasons out, I mean, you could easily say, like, the second season of Luke Cage is going to have a total twist connected to the movies. And then it's like the Sokovian Accords are signed. You know, like, they totally, like, clickbait you essentially, where it's like, what? I thought it was going to be a dusting, but it's they aren't even that far down the road yet.
Yeah,
you just, until somebody articulates it well enough, you don't know when those stories are happening in relation to the films. Now, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I was just going to say Agents
has
of
less
S.H.I.E.L.D.
of a leg to stand on because they've paralleled much of what's happened in the movies. Very overtly, like very on the surface.
Like when you had Age of Ultron, you literally had the episode right before Age of Ultron came out that led into the beginning of Age of Ultron.
Yep.
So they've run pretty close to the main storyline overall, and I think it's safe to say that once that season or once that, you know, that season begins, I think it's gonna pretty much be like damage control after the math.
Well, the season isn't over. That's the big question, because all of these things, they always have something that happens in the back quarter of the season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that connects to whatever happened in the movie that came out at the beginning of the summer.
Yeah.
I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has like 3 or 4 episodes left. They've been in space for the bulk of the season, I believe. Apologies to you who are listening who know the show, because I stopped watching a couple years ago. But I kind of sort of look at some synopses every once in a while. So they went into space at the end of last season. They did a time jump and they went into space. And they've been in space, I believe, most of them, for a while now for this entire season. But again, there was a time jump. So are they on track with the Infinity War timeline? Are they before? Are they after? It's up to them to articulate for their viewers.
That's going to be interesting, because obviously, like you said, we get a season of, you know, any of the Netflix series like once in a blue moon. And when we get it, we get the full series. So if the series was filmed before the events of this that happened in Infinity War, you know, were divulged and whatnot, then it's probably not going to correspond with what's happening in the films. But like you said, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., sorry, and how well they parallel, we should see a pretty exciting season finale in this series. I'm actually willing to jump back into at least this season to kind of see how that's
just
going.
Watch the last few episodes.
Exactly. But yeah, those are some of the questions that we have. And I'm pretty sure there's so many more out there. I'm pretty sure you as the listener, you as the viewer of the film, you might have some. We'd love to hear them. If you have any questions, drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page. But we also have a few future predictions. And obviously with that comes the new films that are coming out, such as obviously we said Ant-Man and the Wasp. But another film that actually is going to fit and explain at least some of the power sets of this new character is the film Captain Marvel, which debuts next year.
Yeah, in March of all times.
Yeah.
So if you didn't know, you're about to know, when the end credit scene at the end of Infinity War occurs, you've got Maria Hill and Nick Fury driving along what looks like a New York street and or Washington, D.C. I'm not sure exactly where they are. The dusting starts happening. Mm-hmm. And both of them actually get dusted. But before Nick Fury is fully dust, he takes out this weird-looking pager and pushes a button, and then you zoom in on it and watch it sending, 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 and then you get what comic book fans would recognize is the Captain Marvel symbol, if you will. Presumably meaning your message got through.
But here's my question to that, and I know we talked about predictions, we're talking about predictions and not questions, but my biggest question with that particular scene was, what was that device? Was it like, because obviously it'd be easy to say that it's a, you know, space communicator of some sort. It's like a cosmic pager, if you will, you know, for cosmic booty calls or whatever you want to call it. But
I'm pretty sure it's not for that.
Pretty sure it's not a booty call.
It was in Sam Jackson's pocket. You don't know. All I'm saying is it'd be easy to state that it's just this cosmic messenger type of thing, but it'd be interesting to see if maybe even this is like a pager that sends a message across time. I mean, that would be interesting, or even into like a parallel.
Because I would say that there's no reason. Doctor Strange already has the time shifting thing kind of down. I don't think that you need to cross time with Captain Marvel. I think that the technology looks like it comes from the 90s and was adapted in the 90s to be a cosmic pager or whatever. So I think they're just basically confirming in the design of the communication device fact that her movie is set in the 90s.
Yeah.
Whatever happens by the end of that movie to take her away from Earth, she has never been back to Earth since whatever that is happened. So she's been gone since the 90s. Now, whenever you're talking about, like, I don't know, I'm going to pretend to be like Einstein right now. When you're talking about space-time and travel and whatever, then one thing that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has never touched on is the influence of going that fast over that amount of distance and how much time should have passed in the interim, right? Like if you go
I see what you're saying.
To another part of the galaxy and come back, then you've aged X number of years, but everything around you has aged thousands of years, potentially. So
I remember Interstellar.
Things like that kind of break stories like this, so you don't want to do too much of that. But perhaps for her, you know, it doesn't mean that she has to be 40 years old or 50 years old when she comes back. She could be also, you know, if they follow the comic books, then she has a bit of a mixed DNA makeup by the time her origin story is complete, and maybe she just doesn't age.
Here's a question I have, because Kevin Feige has gone on record saying that when they created this particular film, that when she's debuted, she will be recognized as the most powerful character that Marvel has ever introduced. So my question is, what is it about Captain Marvel that makes her much more powerful than, say, someone like Scarlet Witch, who I think personally is probably
ridiculously powerful?
Really?
Well, no, Scarlet Witch.
Oh, okay.
I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, she destroyed an Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
Literally single-handedly while using her other hand to ward off the guy who had the other five.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I don't know if there's been a lot of talk about what did he mean by that. Does it mean, because we've seen Scarlet Witch develop, we've definitely seen Thor power up a couple of times now.
Yeah.
Does it mean that she is more powerful than either of the two of them, like as soon as she becomes Captain Marvel? Or does it mean when she gains her powers, she has more power than when any of the others were starting with whatever they do?
Yeah.
You know, there are qualifiers that you could introduce that maybe he was being a bit hyperbolic.
Hmm.
A bit exaggerated, but who knows? I mean, she can fly. She can shoot beams out of her hands. She's super strong. She's durable. At one point in the comics, she becomes an entirely other entity that's basically unkillable and kind of crazy from my recollection, although I could be misstating that.
Hold on. She becomes an entirely different entity?
Binary.
She becomes binary.
Binary is like a different version. It's sort of like the power set alone.
Uh-huh.
Just amped up ridiculously. So,
huh.
Yeah. Which I believe she was binary for several years in publishing terms. She was binary for several years and then came back into her own as Captain Marvel.
Do you think they're going to combine that power set with the character currently she's going to become and create just one powerful...
Well, Captain Marvel, they're introducing Captain Marvel. So like Spider-Man, they're planning on having her for a long time.
Okay.
There's no reason, I don't know that there would be a reason to introduce her and then immediately turn her into the more powerful version of herself the second time that you see her. Especially because potentially one of the other characters in her movie, when powered up, looks kind of similar to what Binary looks like when Captain Marvel goes binary. But all of that's kind of a little too geeky. I think that they're going to stick more to the, she's really powerful. She can do all these things by herself. She's like a whole team on her own. I think that's enough to kind of sell the reason why she's going to turn the tide, let's say.
Hmm. What do we think is going to be the unique aspect of going back to the 90s for this particular film? Because we haven't done a timepiece since Captain America, the First Avenger. They haven't gone to a particular period. What do you think, aside from, because obviously they're going to do an origin story for this one, but what other reason other than doing an origin story would they have to fully have the entire setting of a whole film based in a different time period than now?
Well, that one's easy.
I'm all ears.
Because they're setting up what they're doing after Avengers 4. They're giving you an inroad into...
Oh, okay.
She has the keys to the rest of the next phase of the stories, I think. Because they've also confirmed that her movie is going to involve the Skrulls, which they are an ugly alien race that shapeshifts. And some of them, beyond shapeshifting, can also adopt power sets. From like superheroes, they can not only mimic your shape and your voice, they can mimic your powers. So whatever they do beyond Avengers 4, you will have been introduced to that dynamic from the Captain Marvel solo movie. So it's sort of like they're introducing Captain Marvel because she's going to be, let's say, the Deus Ex Machina for Avengers 4. But also because whatever happens after Avengers 4 to the universe at large, you've now been introduced to in her movie.
Yeah.
That's a very strong probability.
So you're thinking they're going to go Secret Wars.
Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion with Phase 4.
That's the speculation. I don't know why they wouldn't. Hmm. I mean, if you're going to introduce the Skrulls, you kind of got one major play that you can do with them, and that's it.
Huh. Interesting.
I mean, not that's it. That is the play that you would want to do as your major play. Because then, let's just speculate, if, I don't know, Captain America bites the big one in Avengers 4, big sacrifice play, or Tony Stark, maybe that's why Doctor Strange saved him, because Tony's going to actually sacrifice himself, setting things right.
Yeah.
But then, part of the subtext of Secret Invasion is that some of these shapeshifted sleeper agent aliens, don't know that they're sleeper agents. They believe that they are the character. So you could always leave the door open that way to 7 years down the road, well, the real Tony Stark or the real Steve Rogers comes back, and it turns out that the one who sacrificed himself was an alien the whole time, or part of the time. Like, you could literally do a lot of zany things. I don't know that all of it has a point.
Yes,
but you could.
Sheesh.
So this next one, this other future prediction, I'm going to kind of toss it to Chad because I'm not too fully sure what it means, the cross-time capers.
Okay, so on-set photos have been taken in months past because they've long since finished principal photography on Avengers 4 as well. There were on-set photos that showed different versions of surviving characters. You had Captain America. You had Chris Evans in his Avengers 1 outfit.
Yeah.
And clean shaven with a very older looking Tony Stark. And I believe Ant-Man and another character. So it looks like there might be some sort of a blending of different versions of characters from different time streams or different realities in whatever ensues in Avengers 4.
That's what you meant. Okay, because I remember those set photos, and I remember they all had these like unique little bracelets on that look very unique, and it has some correlation to some device in the comics, and there's supposed... Okay, I see what you mean. And you think this is going to play a large role in Avengers 4?
I'm kind of hoping it doesn't, but it looks like it will. I think that there's... Sometimes when you overcomplicate a story, and it's already pretty complicated because you've gotten rid of a lot of characters, and you need to get them back in a way that doesn't feel cheap.
Yeah.
So then to introduce another kind of uber sci-fi conceit into that story, I think some people might get turned off by it if it's too much of the focus. If it's like one subset of the story, like it just happens in one instance where... You know, but the other thing, I'm backing up. The other thing is, if Tony Stark is the old character in that setup, if Tony Stark was saved because Tony Stark builds a machine that helps him wield the stones, and Tony Stark is impacted in ways that the other characters are not, and he's the only one that goes into different pasts or futures or whatever, I think that would be easier to stomach than numerous characters from different timelines recombined in different ways. I think that's just overly complicated for a single film to pull off. But who knows? They've done well so far. I could be wrong.
We have to be really careful with time travel stories because they can get unwieldy and very complicated very quickly.
True. Christopher Lloyd's going to show up in a DeLorean.
Captain, we have to go back.
Just kidding. But that does make, it makes a bit of sense because it from the photos, I know which photos you're talking about. From the photos, it looks like, whomever, whatever the time frame does, it looks like it goes back to that first Avengers film time frame because you have long haired Thor. Like you said, you have Avengers 1 cap uniform. You have all them, that we know of. So that's going to be interesting. That's going to be a really, that scene is going to need a lot of explanation as to why they're shooting that. And if it is a time jump or Robert Downey or Tony Stark, I get these two confused.
Yeah, they're the same.
Tony Stark develops like a time machine of some sorts or something, or he creates a Marvel version of the cosmic treadmill. Who knows? But he ultimately unlocks the technology behind time traveling. I have to agree. I think it's going to overcomplicate a lot for what's already a very busy story. Plain and simple.
Yeah, it's for sure busy.
Another individual who didn't really show up in this film, but I'm pretty sure the impact of the culling itself on him and his surroundings, it's going to be substantial, is Hawkeye and his family. We didn't see him in this film, but it's interesting because Chad mentioned that there is a Ultimate Hawkeye. Or
yeah, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, Marvel introduced a new line of comics called Ultimate Avengers, Ultimate Iron Man, Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate, you know, whatever. And basically the premise was, what if the Marvel universe in comics didn't start until that, the contemporary time frame of round about the year 2000?
Mm-hmm.
How would the origin stories be different? How would the backstories work differently? How would the characters look different? Rather than being, you know, initiated in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah.
And for Ultimate Hawkeye, his backstory was much darker. He had a family that was killed, and he was like a super assassin operative for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Hmm.
It's interesting in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that they've given Hawkeye a family as of Age of Ultron, because in the main Marvel Universe, he does not have a family. He has been married before to the character Mockingbird, who was actually on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a year and a half or so. Not connected in any way to Hawkeye, but she was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And so in the main Marvel Comics universe, he's a bachelor. He's a serial bachelor. And okay. He sometimes has a girlfriend.
Okay.
But he doesn't have kids, and he can't then, you know, lose that family. Here in the cinematic universe, he does have several kids and a wife.
Yeah.
And has retired to life on the farm.
Isn't his wife pregnant as well? I believe.
She gave birth in the end of Ultron, Age of Ultron. They confirmed the name,
yeah,
right, to Black Widow. So... yeah, so it's possible they could be setting him up for a very dark turn if they mirror the Ultimate Hawkeye's backstory as what happens in MCU Hawkeye's life.
What do you think about that, Spence? A killer Hawkeye.
That'd be sad, but, you know, that'd be kind of cool to also watch.
Well, and he's in his Ronin armor, which is another whole different kind of thing. So Ronin is, in a nutshell, Hawkeye was dead for a while, and then he wasn't, and nobody knew that this new Avenger, whose name was Ronin, they didn't know that it was actually Hawkeye inside the Ronin costume until quite a few issues into the run. So
I'm enjoying the look on Spencer's face trying to make sense.
Because that just sounds confusing. You have someone fighting next to you, but you don't know who's inside the costume?
Correct.
Ooh, okay. That's how you want to run your Avengers.
That'd be interesting. I think...
so Jeremy Renner,
yeah,
his costume that they've seen him in on set, it looks like the Ronin outfit.
Oh, it does?
From the comics, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's going to be...
which is a different... It's even a different iteration of Hawkeye in a way, other than the Ultimate Hawkeye. But, I mean, I think it's pretty much guaranteed somebody in his family doesn't make it undusted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Possibly all of them.
Obviously, at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, there was a end credit scene, I think it was a mid-credit scene.
Yeah.
That actually had a lot of people excited for Infinity War because this particular character plays a key role in the comics. If you've read the late 80s Infinity Gauntlet series, then you know that Adam Warlock has a very special relationship with the Soul Stone, as well as a very big role in the endeavor of defeating Thanos. So
sure, he actually wields the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. At the end of the storyline, he's the one wielding it. But it's a big surprise to find out that he's not in this film. So when will we see him is the big question.
Guardians 3.
I don't know. I really hope not.
James Gunn. Now, it could be another incident of... we were told one thing or shown one thing, but it's actually something else.
Yeah.
James Gunn said right after that mid-credit scene finally debuted to the public, he said in press junkets, "I've reserved him for the Guardians franchise. They're not pulling him into the Infinity War stuff." He could be lying.
So yeah, that sounds suspicious.
But he hasn't lied before, though.
It's true.
He's actually been very straightforward with fans.
They paid him off. Paid him to lie.
it's interesting that you say that because it's true. I think one of the things you can state about James Gunn, above all the rest of them, is that James Gunn has always been a director for the people. He's listened to the people. He's even talked about how his, you know, the Easter eggs in his film, you know, how he talks about, oh yeah, there's all these ones. In fact, there's one that nobody has yet to see yet in the films and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, the major Easter egg in Guardians 1 that nobody's found.
Yeah.
According to him.
And he does a lot with his fans. So as much as I would love to agree with that he might be lying, and I'm hoping to see him in the next Avengers movie or something, Adam Warlock, if James Gunn says he's probably going to be, he's reserved for the next Guardians film.
He's reserved.
He's probably...
he's reserved.
Perfect betrayal of trust.
You know what, Spencer? You're lucky I don't have the soundboard in my hand right now. But then, speaking of Guardians 2, we were also introduced to the original Guardians, including, you know, the Ravagers, the older Ravagers, you know, such as the Sylvester Stallone character, all the rest of them.
Right.
Even Miley Cyrus had a role in there.
Which definitely... James Gunn has also said that they have a future in the Guardians franchise.
Kaka! Wait, hold on. What? Well, because I was hoping that they would show
up in
the
next... He basically confirmed that they're not going to... That's not going to be their only appearance. He does plan on using one or more of them, at least to some degree, in future Guardians films. That does not mean that they're ruled out of Avengers 4, but... We don't really know them well enough to rule them in.
That'd be interesting.
Unlike, you know, like a Valkyrie. A Valkyrie, like, we just met her, but we know a lot about her. She's very recent. Those original Guardians, the old Ravagers, if you will, we don't really know anything about any of them yet, aside from what they look like.
That's true.
So I think that they can probably sit out Avengers 4 unless they're like in a cut scene at the end of that one that sets up something for Guardians 3.
That would be really interesting if they're actually the Guardians for Guardians 3.
It would be interesting, but I don't know that you'd...
I don't know that
would succeed.
I've seen the latest Rocky film. I don't mind seeing Sylvester Stallone in another film. I'm just saying. And then that goes to, you know, the future of what is Soul World. The universe or whatever it is within the Soul Stone. Are we going to see that in, you know, who knows, like Ant-Man and the Wasp? How soon are we going to revisit that level of existence for presumably where everybody else is at? Is the big question, which, like we mentioned earlier, the quantum realm was one of those things that was mentioned in press junkets and interviews. Is that going to be something that's going to be majorly touched upon in terms of Soul World in a end credit scene as opposed to a mid credit scene for Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I don't know that they would have to do that. I mean, and we have the benefit now as of the recording of this show, we just saw the new Ant-Man and the Wasp trailer where you presumably have a couple of moments where it's showing you the quantum realm. Part of the quantum realm. It doesn't look a thing like the orange tinted gazebo walking on water soulscape of Soul World that we saw with, you know, Thanos and young Gamora after he snaps his fingers in Infinity War. So I don't know that they're the same. There is the quantum realm, and then there are other universes, and among those other universes, there are pocket universes, which is what Soul World technically is. It's all very complicated in the comic books. I think that they'll probably keep them separate, but there could be pieces from each that they leverage in ultimately working to defeat Thanos and reset things.
It's going to be interesting when they finally crack the mold of or crack the revelation of where exactly Soul World is at or how it's accessed, aside from just being, you know, sacrificed or you know, impacted by the Soul Stone. I'm really hoping, and I'm really probably assuming a lot, but I'm hoping that it is a part of Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm hoping that's a part of that storyline somehow. Like, at least how they get in there or something. I don't know. Who knows? But
it could definitely be, I mean, if you do an end credit scene or a mid-credit scene, let's say Hope, the Wasp, let's say she gets dusted, and then the scene continues and she materializes inside Soul World and the others are there. and she meets Gamora and Falcon and Groot and whomever, like, and so that's when you get your first indication that it's not truly over for those characters. There's something else that they are going to do. Then, you know, maybe that, or I think it sounds like it could be possible that it's, you know, Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer end up there and see characters, you know. It could be, but I think you have a valid point too. Sebastian Stan's scene with them could have been something in the Winter Soldier's brainwashed past when they were younger and he was de-iced for a day to go try to kill them and then re-iced because he failed or something. You know, it could be any number of options.
It's like when you put leftovers in the fridge, Spence. Just as soon as you're done with what you got, put it back in the fridge and take it out later.
Just like the Winter Soldier.
Finally, you know, one of the last questions, obviously, for this particular film is, or actually the last film, Avengers 4, is what the new title is going to be. There's been a lot of little catchphrases, a lot of little things that were mentioned in the Infinity War film. And I guess one of the things that actually somebody held on to and maybe has confirmed was that the title is going to be Avengers Endgame.
I was going to say Avengers Just Kidding.
That would be ridiculous.
Avengers Electric Boogaloo.
Wow, that's definitely
Spencer's been waiting for that one for a few years.
I really hope it's not that, because that would be really bad. But I think it was comicbook.com or comic book resources or whatever has mentioned that they heard from a Disney rep that the final film is going to be Avengers Endgame, which is something that Doctor Strange says before he, you know, turns to dust and says we're in the endgame now. So who knows? Hopefully.
Well, Doctor Strange clearly is the only one who knows something for sure.
100%. So who knows if that's actually the final title, and I guess we'll find out more as more and more information comes out about the Avengers. But like we said, if you haven't seen the film and you listen to this entire thing, you've probably just been ruined for the film. Still go see it if you get a chance. If not, listen to this again and tell us your thoughts on our Facebook page at facebook.com/philosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. We know this is a longer episode, but we hope you stayed with us all the way to the end because we had fun talking about it. And Spence, the look on your face when he was explaining the ultimate Hawkeye was precious. I wish I had a camera. That's all I have to say about that. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Class dismissed.